As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yo, yo, welcome to another post-game edition of the Forum Club. I'm your host, Jovan Buha, Lakers beat writer for The Athletic. And the Lakers got their first win of the 2021-22 season on Sunday night over the Memphis Grizzlies, 121-118. And the game ball went to Carmelo Anthony, who scored a team-high 28 points, passing Moses Malone, the Hall of Fame center, for ninth on the NBA's all-time scoring list. So shout out to Melo. He had a very good game, and I think a game that was what the Lakers envisioned when they signed him this offseason. Not necessarily something he's going to do on a nightly basis, but the 6 of 8 three-point shooting really made Memphis pay for overloading against LeBron, against AD, against Russ, and just overall a solid win for the Lakers. It wasn't pretty. It got a little close there at the end. Looked like Memphis had a shot to at least go to overtime, if not win the game at several points, but the Lakers grinded it out. And with them being shorthanded, with them having so many new pieces and implementing a new offensive and defensive system, I think you take the win. And especially at home, you take the win. They have a relatively easy upcoming stretch of schedule that they should be able to pad their win-loss record. So at this point in the season, Lakers can't be picky on how they win, the manner in which they win. They just need to take the W. So I guess zooming out, Lakers are 1-2. They're 14th in offense and 21st in defense. And you can kind of see the identity shift in this team in terms of, I think the strength of this team is going to be their offense, and the defense is going to be a work in progress. And, you know, over the past couple of years, it's been the opposite, where the Lakers have been a top three defensive team. They were first last year, third a couple years ago, and the offense has been closer to that 10 to 15 range. I think this year is going to be the opposite, where we're looking at a top 10 offense, somewhere in that maybe 5 to 10 range, and a defense that's closer to, you know, 8 to 15, somewhere in there, depending on when Trevor Ariza and Talen Horton-Tucker can return, and just ultimately the rotation and who's in and what the lineups are and stuff. So I think a few things I'm optimistic about just through the first three games are, one, LeBron and AD. I think that, like, those two have not skipped a beat, and they are back to being their dominant selves. I know the Phoenix and Memphis games weren't their best offensive performances, but just overall, kind of looking at the way they've performed through these first few games, AD is at 26 points, 25.7 points a night, 11 rebounds, 2 assists, just under a steal, just under 3 blocks. Like, AD is, I think, back to being AD. I would like to see him play a little closer to the basket and not be as jump shot reliant. You could make the same case for LeBron, but LeBron is right there also at 26, 6 and 5, almost 2 steals a game, a block a game. Like, these are kind of in line with their career numbers. The offense, again, is going to come. I think the Lakers are still clearly figuring out their spacing and some of those dynamics. But to me, LeBron and AD have looked like the versions of them that we're accustomed to and the versions of them that the Lakers are going to need to contend for a championship. So I'm encouraged by that. That first and foremost is the most important thing to me, is that those two have been able to play heavy minutes, and that's something that's going to have to come down, but they've been able to play a lot, remain effective, and AD was particularly brilliant defensively down the stretch of this Memphis game, where he had four blocks in the second half, including a couple over the final couple minutes, and arguably saved the game with a impressive block on Ja Morant after a jump ball just under a minute left. Morant has a lane to the basket. He had a great game, 40 points, 10 assists, was finishing over everybody, including AD at several times. And AD kind of comes at the last second and swats it out of bounds. And that arguably, you know, saved and changed the dynamic of the game late with the way Memphis was playing and with the way Ja was attacking the rim. So I think macro positive is LeBron and AD. Second, Austin Reeves. Austin Reeves is kind of, I mean, come out of nowhere where no one was even expecting him to make the official roster, and he earned it in that Las Vegas mini camp that the Lakers, LeBron put together before actual training camp in media day. And Reeves earned the 14th spot, and since then has done nothing but impress. And he made the Joe Ingles comparison. I've made that comparison as well. I definitely see that. But just for a rookie to come in and be undrafted and just make all the right plays and really just know where to be offensively and defensively, I've been so impressed with Austin Reeves and just his ability to be a connector in lineups and really plug and play and just do whatever the team has needed and sort of shape shift his role as more of a ball handling and playmaking type of guy or more of a catch and shoot guy, a defender. Like he's kind of been a shapeshifter and chameleon in lineups and even in possessions. And it's just, he can do a lot of things. He's a jack of all trades relatively. And I don't want to go overboard with the hype, but I do think that he looks like someone that certainly should be in the rotation right now with the Lakers being shorthanded. But moving forward, I think it's going to be hard to keep him off the floor. And the Lakers are adding a lot of reinforcements on the perimeter. Eventually, Trevor Ariza, THT, Kendrick Nunn, Wayne Ellington. All four guys project to be in the rotation, but I just don't know how you keep Austin Reeves out. And I think, we'll get into the starting lineup a little later, but I think there's a case he might like be the fifth best, the best candidate to take that fifth spot in the starting lineup over DeAndre Jordan. But Austin Reeves, definitely a plus over the last couple games, has been a plus minus superstar, kind of taking the mantle from Alex Crusoe there. Carmelo Anthony's shooting. He's 12 of 18 on threes, has not shot the ball as well inside the arc, is just 6 of 17 on two-pointers. But you will take that 12 of 18 shooting on threes. And again, that's not something that's sustainable. He's not going to do that all season. But I've been impressed with Melo's shooting, his ability to pick and pop, catch and shoot. Really has a nose for relocating off the ball and making sure he's in LeBron's field of vision, in Russell Westbrook's field of vision, Anthony Davis's. Like he just knows how to get open and where to be, and quick release, good release, really pretty shot. And you know, Melo has been that floor spacer. And you know, I think he's kind of the evolution in the rotation, at least, of, you know, Kyle Kuzma and Markieff Morris. And there are some trade-offs to having a guy like Melo in that spot, essentially, instead of those guys, right? Like he's not anywhere close to the defender that Kuz was. And even a steep downgrade from what Keefe was, even as Keefe kind of declined last season. but he is a better shooter than both players and a more confident shooter. And I think just kind of fits that offensive role much better. And you got to live, I guess, with the random kind of ISOs and post-ups that he's going to get. I'm not a fan of those shots. I would like to see them erased from the offense, but if three out of every four shots he's taking are three-pointers, whether it being, you know, trailing as the trail guy in transition or catch and shoot on, you know, driving kicks, pick and pops, like those are the types of plays that you want to see from Carmelo Anthony, and so far he's delivering. And last point I want to make on the optimism side, Frank Vogel adjusting his rotation. And I know he hasn't adjusted it soon enough for everybody, and people want to see more changes, particularly the starting lineup. But aside from that, I think he's shown that after the first game, he basically changed Rajon Rondo's role for the second game and then completely took him out of the rotation for the third game. Austin Reeves played well in that second game. He gave him some first quarter minutes and inserted him into the rotation in the third game. Avery Bradley, another guy who was thrown in that first game in the fourth quarter, had a bit of a role in the second game, didn't perform as well, gets benched basically in the third game. So I think Frank is showing that while, no, he has not changed the starting lineup, and that is an issue and it's something that the Lakers are going to have to figure out and address at some point, I think it's encouraging that he is continuing to tweak. He's evaluating. I think Rondo has not played that well. He's shooting 33% from the field. Is shooting 50% on threes. Has hit a couple, but I think for the most part has kind of taken some wild shots, had some kind of reckless drives where he's just flung stuff up that you don't necessarily want him, shots you don't necessarily want him taking. His assist to turnover ratio right now is 4-3. Has not been the playmaking force that the Lakers have wanted, and frankly has not been very good defensively. So Rondo being out of the rotation to me makes sense. Avery Bradley, good on-ball defender, but we're kind of seeing his limitations, especially offensively. He's not someone that defenses fear. So those two guys, having their minutes reduced, I think makes some sense. And Austin Reeves having a bigger role makes sense. So I think for the flack that Frank is getting for the starting group, I think a lot of that's circumstantial. If Trevor Ariza were healthy, I think he would be starting over DeAndre Jordan. But aside from the starting group, I think Frank has shown an ability to evaluate the rotation and adjust on the fly. And that, in my opinion, should be commended. As for negatives in the early part of this season, number one, Russ's shooting and shot selection. I think on the season, Russ is shooting 34.9% from the field, 9.1% from deep. He finally made his first three last night, Sunday night. He's one of 11 on the year and just shooting 41.7% at the charity stripe for a true shooting percentage of, I'm pulling it up right here, 37.3% for some perspective. League average true shooting percentage this season is 57.5%. So Russell Westbrook is a good 20% below league average true shooting percentage. And I think for me, it's one thing if he's not making shots, but to me, it's the caliber of shots that he's taking. It's he continues to take the shots that defenses want him to take. And I think there's a fine line there where, yes, you can't have the yips and play like Ben Simmons and, pass up wide open dunks. And not that Russ does that, but or whatever do that. But I mean, off the ball, like if Russ catches it in the corner, he should take that shot if his defender is 6'8", 10 feet off of him. Like that is he can make that shot at a solid rate. And I think he should take that shot. What he should not do is dribble the ball up, run a pick and roll with 20 seconds left on the shot clock. His defender goes under the screen. The big is playing under the screen. And Russ pulls up for an uncontested three-pointer with 18 seconds left on the shot clock and barely grazes the rim on it. And like, those are the shots that he should not be taking. And he also does that in the mid range where defenses go under, he'll take a couple dribbles in and take a shot that's, you know, worth, you know, less valuable, worth fewer points. And he's has just as bad of a percentage of you know, bad of a chance of making it. And that to me is, you know, he's taken the most shots of anybody in the league within the first 8 seconds of the shot clock, and he is shooting awfully on you know, I don't have the exact percentage in front of me, but I know it's under 30%. And for Russ, like, you got to cut those out. And turnovers were an issue again. Had 9 last night against Memphis. And I just think, again, he's never going to be the model of efficiency the way we've seen like a Chris Paul or even LeBron when he's kind of at his best with those 10, 11, 12 assists, 2-3 turnovers. I mean, Russ last night had 13 assists, but he also had 9 turnovers. And that's kind of like the give and take with Russ. And I think he's starting to find his way. He's picking his spots more. But to me, the shot selection is still just awful, and that needs to be worked on. Second, DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan is kind of been the scapegoat in the rotation, and I think he's been better than people have given him credit for, but he's still not been good, and he's still not really been at rotation level, and I do think it is time for the Lakers to move on and change the starting group. The starting group currently has a minus 15.3 net rating. Only played 34 minutes, but that is the most minutes of any Lakers lineup, and it is over 4 times the amount of minutes of the second most played lineup, which is the starting group with Avery Bradley in DeAndre Jordan's spot. So, DJ, I get it. They had to change the group because Trevor Ariza was out, but it's just not working. And they're putting up a 92.3 offensive rating with that lineup. And the 107.6 defensive rating is decent. Not great, but you know, you can get away with that if you're scoring well. But DJ is just kind of in the way on drives. It's forcing Russ, LeBron, and AD to all be jump shooters. You definitely don't want that from Russ, but you only want a certain, you want that to a certain extent with LeBron and AD. And this has been too much. I mean, ESPN Stats and Info just put it out. LeBron's average shot this season so far is 18.3 feet away from the basket, which would be the furthest average shot, you know, like his furthest average in terms of his average shot for his career. And that's not going to sustain. We know LeBron's going to get into the paint. We saw it even last night against Memphis where, you know, he had a couple drives late. And when he wants to get into the paint, he can do that at will. But I think part of the reason he's become more of a jump shooter, and part of the reason AD's become more of a jump shooter, and part of the reason even Russ has become more of a jump shooter is because of the spacing with some of those lineups, particularly with DeAndre Jordan. And it's still been the case somewhat with the smaller lineups, but you do see the driving lanes are there when Carmelo Anthony is the other big. Now, Melo presents his own problems, and that's one of the other, you know, my third kind of thing to be a little pessimistic about is just the Lakers' defense, you know, 21st in the league. That should get better, especially when they get some of these rotation guys back. But with Melo and with Russ, even with DeAndre to some extent, he's been pretty awful in drop coverages in the pick and roll. With Malik Monk, like, the Lakers just have some defensive liabilities that they can hide, they can trap, they can kind of find creative ways to, you know, negate some of their ineffectiveness defensively, but it's tough to put, you know, lineups out there that don't have at least two average, two below average defenders, if not a couple destructive defenders. And that just was not really a problem for the last two Laker teams, you know, in terms of the last 2 years. So I think I was kind of wary about the defense and not sure. Like, I kind of picked them to be in that 10 to 15 range in terms of defensive rating, and thinking like they would kind of, things would have to go right for them to even crack the top 10. I know some people are more optimistic about their defense, but to me, I've not really seen much over the first two or first three games that suggest that. Now, again, they're shorthanded. They don't have their full rotation. I think that they can be an elite. They can be an elite defense for stretches and for moments, especially when, like in crunch time, or you know, certain lineups. You know, throw something like, you know, AD, LeBron, Trevor Ariza, Kent Bazemore, and like Austin Reeves, or throw Kendrick Nunn in there, Talen. Like that group can be an elite group. Even Russ, in certain contexts, can be part of an elite defense. But that those lineups like are playing 8, 10, 12, 15 minutes tops. Like the other lineups have to defend at a high level, and that's kind of where, like, even just looking at some of the lineups that are playing, and it's only three game sample of a very small sample size, but you're seeing 147 defensive rating, 133, 125, 163. Like some of these lineups have just been awful defensively. And again, small sample, but I think the eye test has confirmed like there are some issues with this defense. And it's, to me, it's not just the newness of the group. It's not just sort of that everyone kind of finding their on court chemistry and continuity. It is actual, you know, structural issues with the rotation and with certain players and just their limitations. So the other thing would be the offensive spacing, and that kind of ties into DJ. I think the Lakers have to play smaller. And I know like already they're having some issues with defensive rebounding and allowing points in the paint. But to me, it's the trade-off of you add Russell Westbrook and you got to change the way the rest of the rotation is. And yes, he's played with more traditional centers in the past, but that's also been with stretch fours and other shooters around him. And you don't want to turn LeBron and AD into stretch bigs or stretch forwards. You want them handling the ball and doing what they do best. So I think for the Lakers, I expect the DeAndre Jordan starting lineup to be, for them to continue to use it for at least a few more games. But I do think by, say, the 10-game mark, I would be surprised if they're continuing with it with the way it struggled so far. Last point I wanted to make, crunch time offense from the Lakers. I was really impressed with the LeBron-Russ pick and roll. They only ran it a few times, but it's an inverted 1-3 pick and roll where normally, you know, the point guard, and in this case, Russ, would have the ball. But as we know, the Lakers point guard is LeBron James. So the Lakers used Russ as a screener. LeBron is the ball handler. I like it for a few reasons. One, it kind of solves the issue of what do you do with Russ off the ball? Because you're engaging him, you're having him directly involved in the action. So it's the second best thing to having him be the ball handler is having him be the screener. The second thing is that because most of the time teams are going to put point guards on Russ, they're not going to want to switch that pick and roll. And you saw it with Ja Morant defending Russ. Memphis did not want to put Ja on LeBron. So it kind of confuses the defense a little bit of what do we do? Are we trapping? Are we just defending this like a conventional pick and roll? Can you give LeBron that sliver of space to go downhill? The way Memphis was defending it was kind of a soft trap and trying to prevent LeBron from driving. So LeBron hits Russ on the short roll. Russ takes a dribble, jumps up. Steven Adams comes over and rotates. Wraparound pass. Anthony Davis gets a dunk. And they only scored once on it. There was another possession where LeBron, after hitting Russ, cuts to the basket. AD's also cutting at the same time. They both kind of collide into each other. And it's a turnover. The ball goes out of bounds. I think this can be the bread and butter of the Lakers' crunch time offense. And even the offense at times when it is just LeBron and Russ as the only stars on the floor, just kind of throwing defenses off with unconventional pick and roll attack and leveraging Russ as a roller, as someone who can get downhill in a nanosecond and can also make plays as a passer. To me, the thing I've been most impressed with Russ is his passing. And it's not just, people want to say it's stat stuffing, and I think maybe some of the rebounding stuff is stat stuffing to some extent, but the passing is real. Russ is a really, really good passer. Really high-level passer, can make complicated reads, can thread the needle through traffic. And yes, sometimes he's a little too risky and there's going to be those turnovers and they don't look great, but He's also making some high level, especially with his dump off passes, some really nice playmaking and passing there. So I like Russ as a short roller, as sort of that Draymond kind of, you know, the way Steph and Draymond have that connection. I think Russ and LeBron are capable of doing something similar. Now, LeBron is a different type of pick and roll ball handler than Steph. He's not going to pull up from 40 feet, but he's still going to draw attention wherever he is on the floor, and the Lakers need to leverage that. So that would be my final kind of thing from last night's game, is we finally started to see how the Lakers can properly use LeBron and Russ together. And that to me was a positive development, because we hadn't really seen that chemistry yet fully. It kind of been a lot of my turn, your turn, and more so using those two with AD, but this was them together and sort of, you know, just in, again, an unconventional way. But I want to thank you guys for listening. As always, you can follow me on social media at Jovan Buha. It's at JovanBuha. If you've not subscribed to The Athletic, you can do so right now. There's a 50% off deal, so I recommend subscribing to it. Checking out, subscribe off one of my stories, and I would really appreciate that. Helps me out. And if you have not subscribed to this podcast, you can do so on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever you're listening. And I will be back on Thursday with Bill and Anthony to talk about the first two road games. I will be in San Antonio and OKC, so make sure you're following me to stay up to date with everything that's going on with the team, and I will talk to you then.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.